The Green Valley News for Wednesday, November 12th, here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Mark DeGroft with you. A 91-year-old man was taken to Banner University Medical Center's main campus early on Sunday morning after he rolled his vehicle near the Interstate 19 South Frontage Road and Duval Mine Road. He reported having pain and an injury to his hand. Heads up, organizers have postponed Saturday's Amato Chili Cook-Off and Classic Car Show because heavy rain is in the forecast. As of Tuesday, no new date had been set, but organizers are aiming for the spring. The event is in its 15th year and is a major fundraiser for the Amato Youth Center programs, which have seen a big hit due to funding because of federal cuts. Last year's event brought in $34,000, and organizers were aiming for $100,000 this year. It's been 11 months since Juarita Town Manager Shane Dill received an anonymous message alleging that one of his employees was ripping off the town. Many months and one indictment later, Dill said he is confident what happened was an anomaly and the town is well on its way to changing the culture that allowed financial improprieties to take place. Joe Marti Jr., who worked for the Public Works Department, is awaiting trial in Pima County Superior Court on 8 felony counts related to crimes that he is accused of committing from May of 2023 through December of 2024. According to his indictment and Suarita Police Department reports, detectives believe that Marti used fellow employees' town-issued fuel cards for his personal use, used his town-issued purchasing card to acquire equipment he later sold, and that he pawned a piece of surveying equipment belonging to the town. According to court records, Marti was offered a plea agreement last week. His next court appearance is set for December 8th, and he was fired shortly after his arrest in March. Following the criminal investigation, town officials conducted an administrative investigation. A couple of employees left at the beginning of the investigation, and two others were placed on personal improvement plans at the end, he said. While the town had policies and procedures in place, they discovered they weren't always being followed, Dill said. Perhaps due to the size of Suarita and the town staff, people became overly familiar and complacent over the years, he said. The two employees placed on the PIPs wanted an opportunity to change the culture, Dill said. And while they're not saddled with the responsibility of starting that kind of culture, you know, the brains behind that type of environment, we clearly see that they have a role in correcting that culture and helping us to be a better organization moving forward, Dill said. Town officials have thought long and hard over exactly what type of culture that they want. I'd rather establish a line in the sand and say, hey, what's happened before is not acceptable in our organization. Here's the kind of organization that we want to be. So clearly establishing the expectations and then giving them an opportunity to perform at a higher level. And that's the route that I decided to take with the employees that are still with us, Dill said. At the same time, they decided they didn't want to squash individuality, creativity, or trust. That meant we had to look for other ways to be helpful to our employees, but then allow employees to use their own choices, their mistakes, and I think that we've navigated those waters as carefully as an organization could, Dill said. They've tightened up some policies, implemented others, and added levels of review, Dill said. Right now, our finance department is going through their annual audit. We've asked the auditor to be more critical and scrutinize our P card, which is purchase card, use as an organization, Dill said. They're doing a deeper dive on the P card side of it because that was a big part of the Marti case. So we're doing things along those lines to try to make sure that we're not going to repeat what happened. Among the actions being taken by the town are move forward with a plan to purchase upgraded software to improve inventory tracking. They've created a policy that requires all contractors to provide detailed invoices about the work they completed rather than accepting lump sum invoices. They've implemented more stringent background checks. They're now looking at incidents and complaints in addition to criminal convictions. Purchase cards are no longer issued to frontline staff. Every purchase is now reviewed by two people in the relevant department and by one in finance. employees are no longer allowed to have packages delivered to their homes, and everything purchased from Amazon is now processed through finance. The town is now promoting its fraud and ethics hotline more strenuously, beginning at the onboarding process. This last year has been a challenge because town employees know that the organization is better than the perceptions that exist due to the Marty case, Dill said. It's been a difficult chapter this year for our organization, but it's frustrating for co-workers to be doing your job and really trying hard and then seeing somebody else do these kind of things and not get caught, not having any kind of consequence, Dill said. So from that aspect, I believe morale is up. I believe morale will continue to improve, especially if we're successful in continuing to create the new culture that we've talked about. Dill said he was aware that throughout the police reports, multiple town employees expressed their belief that Marty was treated with favoritism. He has tried to address that since that callback in December. I've talked a lot with our leadership team about the balances of being kind and considerate and compassionate, but not being best buddies, Dill said. It's hard because you want to care. You want to be genuinely interested in how your employees are doing, but there's a line that has to be maintained, and you can't become social buddies and things like that, because then it compromises your ability to do your job as a manager or as a supervisor. The community as a whole has been understanding about what happened, and he believes that is because the town has made an effort to be transparent, Dill said. The town council has also placed a lot of trust in the leadership. The entire situation has resulted in the town of Suarita becoming a stronger organization, he said. I would much rather deal with these things now as a growing organization than to deal with them when we're the size of Marana, or even worse, Tucson, Dill said. So while on one hand I would wish we had never had to deal with that kind of stuff, on the other hand, I'm grateful that we're having to deal with it now. Investigators are trying to determine the cause of a workbench fire that erupted in the 800 block of Bell Tower Drive on Friday. The homeowner was able to extinguish it with a garden hose after his wife found the blaze and safely removed their vehicle. Santa Rita Fire District crews came to make sure that the fire hadn't gotten into the attic. The workbench contained lithium batteries that were being charged, and SRFD crews are reminding people not to leave such batteries unattended while charging and to stop using them if they become damaged, swollen, or unusually hot. It's an ancient but all-forgotten art form, a handwritten expression of love and gratitude that seems to have faded away with the digital age. That's why Green Valley resident and author Karu Papriz years ago launched an effort to encourage people to write pen-to-paper thank-you letters, not by email, and certainly not by text. Now Papriz wants to declare Green Valley as a national letter day city. I'd like to try to do that next year, he said, adding that he hopes to approach the powers that be about the idea. The author of the inspirational and motivational book, The Legacy Letters, has dubbed November as National Thank You Letter Month and November 14th as National Thank You Letter Day. It's no coincidence that Papriz has timed it with the month in the Americans celebrate Thanksgiving and Veterans Day. The time that you put into a letter is the greatest gift in the world, he said, and people, whether they can ever enunciate that or not, they know that this took time to put together. By declaring a day and month dedicated to simple letters of thanks, Papriz said his goal is to remind people everywhere of the power of the handwritten note. In a recent post on Instagram, he said a thank you letter shows the writer down to really think about the message. It slows him down to give a receiving party a fully crafted document of the writer's positive thoughts and their thinking of unique penmanship. It holds us hold gratitude in our hands, he said. It connects us heart to heart, person to person, in a way that no screen ever can. Papriz encouraged people to write letters thanking a veteran for his or her service to their country this month. He also urges people to write letters to those serving in the military, anywhere that they are stationed around the world. You can actually write a letter to someone overseas, he said. They'll take him in. The written passage is also a way of sharing love with somebody you care about, he said. I think in a day and time when we are discombobulated because of the speed of where we're going with everything and the divisive way that things are, this is such a simple way of reaching out and touching somebody, he said. He also believes it's valuable to connect with someone from the past, such as a teacher, to thank them for what they did for a grateful student's learning experience. Papris practices what he preaches. He said he wrote a love letters to his wife, Donnie Kildu, for two letters before they married. They met on a ranch south of Patagonia when he was in the lone hand and the only cowboy. He and Donnie both cherished the letter that their young son, Cutter, wrote to them, so much so that they framed it. It reads, Dear Mom and Dad, thank you for all the wonderful times I have had with you. I love you, and I am glad I was born into this family. P.S. I would write more, but I can't. The postcard is very limited. Love, Cutter. Today, Cutter is a college student. Papris led the kids of Continental School to write and produce the world's largest envelope with the world's largest postage stamp in 2018. Guinness Book of World Records did not have a category for the letter, just the envelope. And the envelope and the letter alone were the size of a basketball court. The 85-foot by 50-foot letter, signed by more than 600 students, teachers, and staff at Continental, read, Dear Mom and Dad and my teachers, thank you for helping me learn and taking good care of me and being nice to me. Thank you for always helping me to accomplish anything I can do. Thank you for giving me food and clothes and shoes to wear. And thank you for helping me with everything. You are the best. Just for fun, Papris has written celebrities in the past. I wrote a letter to Dr. Seuss and I got a reply, he said, of the popular children's author and illustrator. He said he also wrote TV journalist Morley Safer and political activist Ralph Nader, both of whom wrote him back. Papris defined what makes an effective thank you letter: civility, gratitude, manners, and thankfulness. I think it says everything about a thank you letter that you should incorporate, and what it wants to accomplish is how vital civility is, he said. In a time when it's seriously lacking, especially in politics, he said that civility is all the more important. His ultimate message revolves around the concept of hope for a better outcome. When you give up on hope, you're done, he said. I think how these four pillars are incorporated in the idea of hope, and especially the hope that, hey, I can speak to anybody in the world and bridge this divisiveness and say, hey, look, I'm going to look out for the better angels of one's nature. It's 18 minutes to 10. Longtime local television and radio host Bill Buckmaster is shutting down his popular program at the end of this year. I'm very proud of what I've done, but I honestly would like to kick back a little and spend more time with my fiance and perhaps travel 1 week out of every month and do some of these other projects, Buckmaster told the Tucson Sentinel on Monday, the day he announced his decision on his Facebook page. Buckmaster's career has spanned more than half a century, including more than three decades in Tucson. He estimates he has interviewed more than 10,000 people. Buckmaster, who's now 77 years old, earned 5 Emmy nominations during his 22 years hosting Arizona Illustrated on Arizona Public Media. He's winding up 15 years on KVOI Radio in Tucson, hosting The Buckmaster Show. He's been inducted into the Nevada and Arizona Broadcaster Halls of Fame. Dan Shearer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sorita Sun, who regularly sat in while Buckmaster was on vacation, said that Buckmaster has the best Rolodex in the business. Guests were willing to come on the show, Shearer said, because they knew that he would stick to the topic at hand, and he was fair. And just like him, they wanted to have accurate information out in the community so people could make up their own minds on issues. Buckmaster plans to marry Darlene Brady, a retired CPA whom he met on a blind date 1 year ago on Monday. He said he would stay in the storytelling business and work with clients to help them tell stories via interviews that could be posted to their websites. The Arizona State Board of Education released letter grades for all of the state's schools recently, and the Continental School District received an A for the second consecutive year. The system measures year-to-year student academic growth, proficiency on English language arts, math and science, the proficiency and academic growth of English language learners. Walden Grove's high school marching band was a bronze medal finalist at Arizona Marching Band Association 2A Championships with a score of 80.769 to finish their season. And Suarita High School placed 7th at the 5A Championships with 82.55. A 24-year-old man was fatally shot in an argument on Friday night, Tucson police say. At about 10:25 p.m., Arturo Gastelum was shot during an argument in the 4600 block of South Callejon near East Irvington Road and East Benson Highway in Tucson, the police said in a news release. While on the call about the shooting, officers were called to a single car crash near South Campbell Avenue and East Irvington. There, a wounded Gastelum was found in the vehicle. He died at the crash scene, police said. On Saturday, police arrested Jerome Middleton III, 21 years old, on suspicion of second-degree murder in connection with the shooting. The investigation continues. A 26-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of second-degree murder in connection with a DUI-related weekend wreck in which Tucson police say he was driving at more than 100 miles per hour. About 7 a.m. on Saturday, Xavier Jordan was speeding on West Aviation Parkway when he struck an eastbound car turning left onto South Country Club Road. Police said Jordan was traveling at speeds of more than twice the posted 55-mile-per-hour speed limit just before the collision, the release said. In the crash, Jean-David Lebeau, 37, was turning left on a green light, but without the turn arrow when the Ford 500 he was driving was struck by Jordan, who was driving a Chevrolet Impala. Lebeau died at the crash scene. Jordan was taken to the hospital with injuries that were deemed non-life-threatening. He was later determined to be impaired at the time of the crash. Jordan was arrested, booked into Pima County Jail, on suspicion of second-degree murder. And the skeletal remains of a 77-year-old man were found in a desert area in the Catalina foothills, authorities say. The remains were found at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on October 29th, in the 5100 block of North Swan Road, south of East Sunrise Road, the Pima County Sheriff's Department said. The Pima County Office of the Medical Examiner helped identify the remains as those of Thomas Reuter, the release said. The circumstances surrounding Reuter's death remain under investigation. And this week's travels with Two Sisters, Oregon Adventures, exploring the Beaver State through rocks and water. In May of 2010, we crossed the state line into Oregon, the ninth largest state, that is known for its natural beauty, outdoor recreational opportunities, numerous national and state parks, an abundance of scenic drives, and 363 miles of coastline with stunning ocean views. In this beautiful environment, we took hundreds of photos, met several other explorers, and wandered for miles to discover the state's natural beauty and hidden secrets. During our visit to the Smith Rock State Park, located near Terrebonne, we leisurely drove through the park, stopped to take photos of the snow-covered mountains, walked along gravel paths to view spectacular rock formations up close, and spent time absorbing the beauty of the area. As the John Day Fossil Beds National Monument, we visited two units of the park. Driving through the Sheep Rock unit, we stopped on several occasions to take photos and observe the unique and beautiful scenery created by former volcanic activity. In the Painted Hills unit of this national monument, we were stunned by the multicolored environment, took dozens of photos of the rust-colored hills, walked along boardwalks, and read multiple information signs that explained how this spectacular environment was created. At the Newberry National Volcanic Monument, located near Bend, we drove up the cinder road to the top of Newberry Crater, took photos of the extensive lava flow, picked up and examined unique rock specimens, stopped at Paulina Lake and took several photos of the area from the Paulina Peak observation site. At the Kamwa Chung State Heritage Site, located in John Day, we spent a delightful morning in a unique environment that provided us an opportunity to learn about the history of Chinese immigration to Oregon. And during the preparations for our cross-country journey, we highlighted the state capitol on 48 state maps. Our goal was to see every capitol building. And during our exploration of Oregon, we headed to Salem to see one of the five Art Deco state capitols. This imposing white building, listed on the National Register of Historic Places, was impressive with its huge bronze statue on top. That day we strolled through Wilson Park, took photos of Lewis and Clark sculpture, viewed the Senate chambers, and had a discussion with the docents. In the Sheeprock unit of the John Day Fossil Beds National Monument, we stopped at the Thomas Condon Visitor Center, a museum dedicated to local fossils, and on that day we wandered from fossil to fossil, read information signs, and took photos of the exhibits. In Prineville, we visited Crook County Courthouse, built in 1909 of native basalt from a local quarry. We strolled along the courthouse grounds, took photos of the impressive structure, toured the inside of the historic structure, and read all of the information panels. On the Warm Springs Reservation, we spent an entire afternoon at the museum at Warm Springs that preserves the history, tradition, and culture of the Springs, Wasco, and Paiute tribes. We roamed through all of the information and extensive exhibits and read the panels and took several photos. On the 66-mile Cascade Lakes National Scenic Highway, we took some pictures of huge lava fields and sat at a picnic table at South Twin Lake to breathe in the cool, clean air. And then we stood at Three Sisters Viewpoint and took photos of the South Sister, spent time with Devil's Garden, amazed at the unique rocks. And then we went on our way to Mount Hood Scenic Byway. We stopped to take pictures of the river and stopped on several occasions to examine the huge lava fields. On the historic Columbia River Highway Byway, we stopped at various viewpoints to admire the mighty Columbia River. At the Peter Skeen Ogden State Scenic Viewpoint in Terrebonne, we explored Crooked River Gorge and stopped at every viewpoint, walked across the bridge to get another perspective of the natural beauty of the area. At Bullards Beach State Park in Bandon, we took pictures of the beach area and walked around. And Devil's Churn Viewpoint in Yakutsk, we listened to the roar of the incoming tide. At Port Orford Head State Park, we walked along the shoreline, taking photos of impressive rock formations. And at Camp Foulweather in Newport, we also took pictures and read information signs. At Fort Clatsop in Astoria, we toured the Lewis and Clark National Historic Park. At Gregory Point, we stopped to take pictures along the coastline, and in Florence, we stopped to see the Spouting Horn, where we witnessed the water climb to an impressive height. In Reedsport, we walked along the shoreline and explored the lighthouse at the Umpqua Lighthouse State Park. At Arch Rock State Park in Brookings, we took several photos, and in Tillamook, we took photos of the Camp Mears Lighthouse and Octopus Trees. Our journey along the Pacific Coast Highway, we took photos of pelicans and blue herons, sea lions, white egrets, seagulls, sand dunes, rock formations, and impressive tidal waves. Oregon, the Beaver State, is a state that offers a wide variety of opportunities for explorers, and we enjoyed every day we spent exploring this state. And today in history at 7 minutes till... On this date in 1620, 41 pilgrims aboard the Mayflower, anchored off Massachusetts, signed the Mayflower Compact, creating a local government for the colony. They called for a city civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation. In 1918, fighting in World War I ended as the Allies and Germany signed an armistice aboard a railroad car in northern France. In 1921, the remains of an unidentified American service member were interred in a tomb of the unknown soldier at the Arlington National Cemetery in a ceremony presided over by President Warren G. Harding. In 1938, Irish-born Mary Mallon, who'd gained notoriety as Typhoid Mary, blamed for the deaths of three people, died on the North Brother Island in New York's East River at the age of 69 and after 23 years of mandatory quarantine. In 1966, Gemini 12 blessed it off for a four-day mission with astronauts James A. Lovell, Edwin Balls Aldrin, Jr. aboard. It was the 10th and final crewed flight of NASA's Gemini program. In 1987, following the failure of two Supreme Court nominations, President Ronald Reagan announced his choice of Judge Anthony M. Kennedy, who went on to win the confirmation. And in 2020, Georgia's Secretary of State announced an audit of presidential election results because the margin was so tight. Well, coming up with great story ideas is hard, and bringing those stories to life is even harder. But the biggest challenge for many authors comes last, getting their work in front of other readers. Local authors have found ways to conquer those challenges. What's happening? There's a holiday book fair that is presented by the Green Valley Writers Group and the Arizona Authors Association. It's on Saturday, November 29th, from 9 in the morning to 1 o'clock p.m. at the Desert Hills Lutheran Church, and that's at 2150 South Camino del Sol in Green Valley. And local and Tucson area-based authors will be selling and signing their books and interacting with attendees. And the event is free and open to the public. Suarita author David R. Davis is among several local writers who use the Green Valley Writers Group, a local critique forum, to flesh out their stories. We read for about 10 minutes. Everybody goes around the table and gives some comment about what they liked, what they didn't like, and what might be needed, he said. You have to trust that, and I trust what they're saying. And once the writing is finished, authors face the task of publishing. Green Valley author Hugh Bakerch delegates much of this work to Wheatmark, which is a Tucson company that assists independent authors with editing, design, and multi-format book distribution. Essentially, I publish under my own company. It's called Hideaway Park Press, and Wheatmark does all of the work for me, Bakerch said. As much as I enjoy writing, I would not care to be sitting there and putting things into an e-format and all that business that's involved. And that'll take care of the reading of the Green Valley News. Thank you so much for joining me, Mark DeGroft, with you today. I'll be back on Friday. Till then, take care.